4 minutes after 10 o'clock, this is Jody Denberg. Welcome to KUTX's annual South by Southwest wrap-up show. It is the morning after, and as we have done for countless Sundays, we welcome Rolling Stone senior writer David Frick to the airwaves, who these days also hosts the Writer's Block on Sirius XM, and we've rated David's CD collection that he's amassed over the last few days. We've looked through some of his articles. We're going to find out about some of his South by Southwest experiences, and we're just going to play a ton of good music. Good to see you, my friend.
Good morning, and good morning all. Thanks for having me back yet again.
Any idea as to how many South by Southwests you've attended?
The first one was 1991, and I haven't missed one since. I actually have an unbroken record, and I nearly broke it this year when the blizzard hit New York on Tuesday, and I kept looking at the schedule. I know there were like 6,000 flights canceled as a result of that storm, and I kept looking at mine, said on, because I was leaving Wednesday morning from Newark, said on schedule, and I went, no, this can't be real. We left on schedule. It was incredible, and I got here in time to do my Mick Fleetwood interview over at the convention center, which was a total gas, hit the ground running, and I'm back here again.
And we spent yesterday afternoon, you and I and musician Robin Hitchcock, who will join David and I at noon, going through music, anything goes, artists that you or Robin or I had seen during South By, new releases that you'd gotten through your radio gig or your journalism gigs.
Or stuff that I buy, which is still in full effect.
And I had a few things to share, and I think we should get into the music.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
So I wanted to, although I did not make it, go to the Victorian Driscoll Room Friday night for Richard Barone's Sorrows and Promises. This is a new album he has where he covers the songs of the Greenwich Village early 60s period. And it seemed appropriate to start with this particular song from Mr. Barone. So we shall, and we'll tell you more about it in a minute. David Frick is with me. I'm Jody Denberg. This is KUTX, and this is Richard Barone.
Sunday morning brings the dawning. It's just a restless feeling by my side. Early dawning, Sunday morning, it's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind you, there's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all.
Figure when you have a guest from New York City riding shotgun with you, you might as well start the show with a couple of songs written by Lou Reed. Jody Denberg here with Rolling Stone's David Frick, and we had Richard Barone's version of Sunday Morning from Sorrows and Promises.
And a song, I might add, was co-written by John Cale.
Ah.
Cale actually gets, he gets credit for that one as well, so we should also salute the great Welshman as well.
Who recently turned 75 just a few days ago. Sunday Morning, here we are. And that's from Richard Barone's record, Sorrows and Promises. He covers the works of Greenwich Village, early 1960s, and Richard Barone was in town for South By, performing songs from that show with a slew of guests at the Victorian Room at the Driscoll. And then The Velvet Underground and Nico, There She Goes Again. I'm thinking that's a Lou Reed solo.
That is a Lou Reed song, and but it's interesting because in one of my earliest interviews with Lou, in talking about the Velvet Underground, he told me that, and this may have been sort of apocryphal, but he said that the Velvets in the beginning had a rule that nobody was allowed to play blues licks. And if you played a blues lick, you were fined. Now, this may or may not have been really true, but one of the interesting things about that song is the lick that introduces the song and runs through it isn't a blues lick, but they stole it from Hitchhike by Marvin Gaye. So, you know, there was blues was loosely defined at that point in the Velvets.
Now, when I was reading my latest issue of Rolling Stone magazine a night or two ago, there was a page of Lou Reed memorabilia, perhaps things that Laurie Anderson was giving to the New York Public Library collection, and you had annotated the items that were on the page.
Yeah, I actually did two pieces. There's one in the magazine, and there's a longer one online in which Laurie is extensively quoted. I also spoke to one of the curators at the New York Public Library and to Don Fleming, who has been cataloging the archive for Laurie. He also works with the Alan Lomax Estate. New York Public Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center has acquired Lou Reed's personal archive. And it's an astonishing mass of memorabilia, information, paperwork. Apparently there are 300 linear feet of paperwork, contracts, depositions, letters to and from other artists, documentation. I saw a memo from RCA Records detailing the arrangements for the recording of a new album, Lou's, I think, new solo album in London in July of 1962. No, not July 16th of 1972. And it clearly said that David Bowie was the producer and that Lou would not be responsible for his financial considerations.
I was quite surprised to see what a pack rat Lou was, that he kept all of these things. It wasn't what you think, what wasn't what I thought of when I think of Lou.
Well, one of the things was that being an artist, you know, he had to pay taxes. So there's a toll booth receipt in there from Minnesota. You know, the tour bus pops through. Okay, that's $5. You know, that's an expense. He's, you know, he's New York. He knows how to deal with this. But there was a handwritten thing on a yellow, like small yellow legal pad, and it said receipts, Doug Yule, $32.61. You know, it's like, because Doug was actually touring with Lou in the mid 70s for a while, and this was his receipt. You know, this is the, you get back for your, you know, you bought some gas for the van or something, who knows what.
Well, Sunday Morning and There She Goes Again, which we both just heard, came from the first album by the Velvet Underground and Nico. And this just had an anniversary, right?
It was released on March 12th of 1967.
One of the most influential records in rock and roll history.
And it was delayed for a number of months because of a problem with the back artwork. There was a photo that included sort of an image from a light show, one of Andy Warhol's exploding plastic inevitable images. And it had a dancer, a guy named Eric Emerson. And he sued, I believe, the label Verve Records for the use of it, and so this held up the release of the album. The album should have come out in 1966.
But then we might not have had the banana.
Well, the banana also was a problem because the banana involved extensive manufacturing. It was a peelable banana, and between the sticker and the artwork, it just held everything up, and then Eric Emerson's thing made it even worse. And so the result was the album came out like 7 months late, and by 1967, people were talking about Hendrix and Sgt. Pepper, and the banana record just, people didn't pay any attention to it.
Well, it's hard to argue, though, how history has treated this record, and here we are on the 50th anniversary talking about it, talking to David Frick, who came over yesterday with Robin Hitchcock, who joins us at noon, and David always has his little cache of CDs that are new to him, and one that I was especially excited to hear was by Jesse Coulter, the widow of Waylon Jennings. And as this is Sunday Morning, it seems appropriate to play from this. You know, it's interesting. I met Jesse Coulter only one time, but knowing that she was married to Waylon Jennings and her son was Shooter Jennings, I expected a rough and tumble woman, and she's the exact opposite.
This album is extraordinary. I heard it first at a sort of a playback session at Sony, I think it was in January, and was immediately blown away. It's, the album is called The Psalms, and it's exactly what that means. It is Jesse singing and playing piano, improvising to the original Psalms of King David from the Bible. The story is that the gentleman who produced the record, Lenny Kaye, has played with Patti Smith, curated Nuggets, you know, great rock critic in his own right. He was working on Waylon Jennings' autobiography and staying at Waylon's house. He came down one morning, and Jesse was at the piano doing this. She was singing and playing piano to a book of the Psalms. Now, of course, the Psalms have no notation, so they have to be improvised if you're going to sing and play with them. And he was just stunned by what she was doing. So he eventually took her into the studio for two sessions over a couple of years, and then subsequently did some very discreet and appropriate overdubs. The jazz drummer Joey Barron plays on it. John Jackson plays mandolin from the Jayhawks. Al Cooper is on it. Lenny plays all over it, but in a way that doesn't distract from the essential beauty and spirituality of what Jesse does on the piano and in her singing.
I was small among my brothers and the youngest in my father's house. I tended my father's sheep. My hands made a harp. My fingers fashioned a lyre. Tell my Lord, the Lord himself, it is he who will hear. was he who sent his messenger and took me from my father's sheep and anointed me with his anointing oil. His anointing oil. My brothers were handsome and tall, but the Lord was not pleased with them. I went out to meet the Philistine, and he cursed me by his idol, but I drew his own sword, and I beheaded him.
Sky fills
KUTX, David Frick joining me. This is Jody Denberg, starting your Sunday morning post South by Southwest, easing into it with me actually raiding David's small CD collection he brought with him, two advances of records that won't be out. Well, not they're not out today. We heard David Crosby, Sky Trails is the name of the record. Nice female vocals.
That is Becca Stevens, who co-wrote the song with him, sang it with him, and she was part of his touring band last fall when he was out promoting the album Lighthouse, and they sounded fantastic together. And I talked to David backstage at Town Hall, and he said, look, if you think this is good, wait till you hear the next album. And sure enough, he shot me an email a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, I want you to hear this stuff. And he just immediately sent it. The record does not come out until April, but he's on such a roll between the Cross album, Lighthouse, and this one. It's called Sky Trails. He's having a renaissance at an age that, you know, most artists, they're just kicking back and just saying, man, I had a good run. He's out there fighting the fight lyrically and spiritually, and he's doing it on someone else's liver.
Because for so many years, David Crosby had, what, two or three solo albums in decades?
He was not into the productive cycle. Well, also just all the cycle of dramas and things that, you know, touring and whatnot that went on with Crosby, Stills and Nash, with and without Young, and everything that was going on in his personal life. And I think that, you know, at this point, he just feels an urgency that is also driven by what he sees in the world around him. There's a song on the record called Capital, which is, he actually put it up on SoundCloud and, you know, did some Twitter action about it, because it's essentially about what a mess the American Congress is, and just, you know, says it straight out, but in a song that's actually quite, you know, beautiful and moving at the same time.
And for those of you on Twitter, David is so accessible. If you have a question for him, he's essentially just doing an interview for months on end, and I've shot him a question and gotten an answer. Thank you, David Crosby. The new album, Sky Trails, in April. We heard the title track. We also heard Jesse Coulter, who is, of course, an artist in her own right, but also was Waylon Jennings' wife for so many years. Psalm 151 from the album The Psalms, which David was telling us Lenny K produced. And the thing about The Psalms is there's not any notated music.
There is no surviving notation of, you know, how they were sung or how they were performed. They're simply the words. The ones you find in the Bible. Now, apparently, he wrote, according to legend, or according to, you know, Christian doctrine and Hebrew, he wrote 3,600 of them. Now, the Bible doesn't have that many. This Psalm 151, which is subtitled King David's Last Psalm, is not in the Bible. At this playback session at Sony that Lenny K. hosted, he pointed out that it's in fact in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It wasn't in the Bible. So this is the one piece on the record. There are 12 of them, including obviously Psalm 23, The Lord is My Shepherd, 150, Praise Ye the Lord. But this one is not in the Bible. It's actually from the Dead Sea Scrolls.
And the Jesse Coulter record comes out next week?
On March 24th.
We continue with Terry Allen. One of my highlights from South by Southwest was going to the Austin Music Awards last Sunday. Terry Allen was given the first annual Towns Van Zandt Award, and one of the best shows I'll ever see was just a couple of months ago. Terry Allen performed the two records of his he's best known for that were just reissued, Lubbock on Everything and Juarez. And so I thought we'd play a Terry Allen track from one of those reissues.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
And in fact, David picked this song. It's called The Girl Who Danced Oklahoma.
Yeah, she tried to live on the inside and get a house and make a home. And she tried to give and be satisfied. Sides again.
10 years later in Southern California. Ellie met her.
KETX 98.9, it's our South by wrap-up show, done annually every year by Rolling Stone and Sirius XM's David Frick, and myself, Jody Denberg, will be joined at noon by Robin Hitchcock. I chose a Terry Allen song. Well, that David chose the song, and I chose to play some Terry Allen because he was at the Austin Music Awards, received the first annual Towns Van Zandt Award, was joined on stage by Joe Ely, Lyle Lovett, Cat Edmondson, and one of two Terry Allen records recently reissued from 1979's Lubbock on Everything, The Girl Who Danced Oklahoma. And then it was Fleetwood Mac from Then Play On, Rattlesnake Shake. And David, I don't often see reviews of the panels at South by Southwest, but I did see one that Peter Blackstock wrote about the panel you did one-on-one with Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac, and it was a rave, and I was just thinking David must have had a blast.
I had such a blast. Actually, Peter was very, very generous in his review, and I really appreciate that, Peter, if you're out there. That was an amazing event. I was asked to do this thing, and the sort of the basis of it was that Mick is putting out a book through Genesis Publications, the publisher that does those very lavish and detailed publications. They've done Jimmy Page, obviously George Harrison, various Beatles and Stones books, but they're Mick's doing one called Love That Burns, A Chronicle of Fleetwood Mac, Volume 1, 1967 to 1974, and it covers the origins of Fleetwood Mac, everything that happened on the way to Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham joining the band. And so it really covers an age that people forget, you know, Rumors, Tusk, yes, these are really important and big records, but none of it would have happened except for the vision and genius of the guitarist Peter Green, who started the band in 1967 with Mick Fleetwood and eventually John McVie, the bassist, and actually named the band after Mick and John. He called it Fleetwood Mac. After an instrumental that they recorded at their first demo session. And Mick was, that's my favorite period of Fleetwood Mac. And it's just guitar nirvana. It's Peter, Jeremy Spencer, Danny Kirwan, and then eventually Bob Welsh before the Rumors change over. And Mick went into just delightful detail and actually quite poignant detail about Peter, his sort of spiritual conflicts, his difficulty dealing with fame, the guilt over material wealth, which eventually led him to leave the band. And at the same time, he talked about Peter's sense of humor. That song, Rattlesnake Shake, it's a song, Peter wrote it, and it's basically about enjoying the pleasure of one's own company. And there's a line in there, you might have caught it, it says, I know this guy, his name is Mick. He don't mind. He don't care if he don't have no chick. You know, he was actually also a very funny man, but Peter was an extraordinary guitar player. He replaced Eric Clapton in John Mayall's Blues Breakers, not an easy gig, and clearly, you know, developed a reputation of his own, and then just walked away from it all in 1970. And he's been back playing to some degree, but the prowess and the fire that he brought to the electric guitar, which would have made him easily the equivalent of a Clapton, Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, if he'd continued, he just left that behind as well.
Your panel with Mick Fleetwood is archived, I believe.
I believe so. It might be out there somewhere.
Yeah, I think the audio is archived, so you could do a search for that. Anyone who came to town for South by Southwest hoping to see the quintessential Austinite Willie Nelson certainly wasn't disappointed. And in fact, last Sunday, Sister Bobby Nelson received the Hall of Fame honors at the Austin Music Awards. Willie Nelson showed up at Ray Benson's birthday party Tuesday night at GSD&M, and Willie had his own luck reunion. Someday you're going to have to make that 45-minute trip.
Someday I need to get out of the city limits. That's my problem. I hit the ground running, and there's just too much action for me to even, you know, get in the car much past Waterloo or End of an Ear.
Well, I express gratitude to Willie Nelson now and every day for being here. He's going to be 84 years old next month.
Wow.
And he rocked it. I saw some video from GSD&M. I saw some video from the Luck Reunion. Willie was happy, surrounded by his sons, Lucas and Micah, and his sister, Bobby, who was honored as well. So here on KUTX, the South by Wrap-Up Show, is Willie Nelson and Sister Bobby with the Django Reinhardt song. Thank you. A breezy song and lyrically apropos for this Sunday morning KUTX South by wrap-up show. David Frick chose that one for us. A duo I'm not familiar with.
Tuomo and Markus, they are from Helsinki, Finland. Tuomo Pratala and Markus Nordenstreng, who has been in a band that I really like called the Latebirds from Finland. They're very tight with the guys in Wilco and the Jayhawks, so you can hear a bit of that Americana, but coming from outside the national borders and bringing a little, almost a wishfulness about trying to connect with that whole feeling of the band and American country rock, but with a bit of a European sensibility. The album is called Dead Circles. It came out in Finland last year. It's supposed to be out in this country early 2017, and I saw them actually at the Belmont on Thursday night, 8 p.m. It was the show put on by the John Lennon Educational Bus. And I've known Markus for years and actually surprised him. He didn't realize I was coming, and we had a really great connection. And I hadn't seen his new band before, and they were just fantastic. I really highly recommend this record. It's called Dead Circles. Hopefully it'll be out here soon. It is available on import if you can't wait that long.
And we heard Willie Nelson and Sister Bobby Nelson. Willie turned up at Ray Benson's birthday party Tuesday night at GSD&M, and then, of course, hosted his Luck reunion with a cast of hundreds out in Pedernales. And Willie and Sister Bobby, the latter of whom got the Hall of Fame Award at the Austin Music Awards last Sunday, did a version of Django Reinhardt's Nuage.
I believe it's pronounced Niage, and it's French for clouds. And it was originally recorded in 1946 by Django Reinhardt with Stefan Grappelli and the Hot Club of France.
And ladies and gentlemen, David Frick had no electronic device in front of him when he pulled that information out of the thin air. He just made it happen, and he's making this music happen for us. Until 2 today, Robin Hitchcock joins us at the halfway point. And, okay, one more. I was going rifling through your stack of advance records, and I had to hear a little bit of this. Ray Davies of the Kinks has an album called...
Or as Ray Davies, as I'm going to just keep calling him.
He always corrects me when he's on the air. Actually, it's Davis. I think he just does that to...
Well, they also say David Bowie, so I don't know what the hell's going on over there.
It's his name. He can say it how he wants. Americana. So last week, in the midst of South by Southwest, we saw pictures online of Ray Davies being knighted.
Sometimes I think, God, man, I've lived too long when I start seeing stuff like this. But, you know, as a songwriter, as a singer, and as someone who has celebrated and really analyzed British social culture so incisively and with such almost like barbed fondness, I can't think of any other musician of his generation who deserves being knighted better. Obviously, I like Sir Mick, Sir Elton, Sir Paul, all the sirs.
Sir Van.
But man, I think Ray Davies is, he's deserved it for so long, and I'm genuinely glad that he got it.
The quintessential Brit, Ray Davies.
Davis.
Makes a new album called Americana.
Yes, it's called Americana, and he made it with an American band. He recorded the entire album with the Jayhawks. And when I first heard it at a playback at Sony earlier this year, the first thing I thought of was like, you know, if there's no Kinks reunion, this is the closest thing he could get to a band of Americans who can be like the Kinks at the time of Muswell Hillbillies.
Living day to day, accelerating past. The world's in a blur, but we're finishing fast.
KUTX's South By wrap-up show during South By Southwest, Ray Davies, or Davis, was knighted, and in honor of his knighthood, we heard a song from the forthcoming Americana record, which features the Jayhawks as Ray's band, Wings of Fantasy. And David Frick, when it comes to Americana, there's no musical artist that I think sums up that word better than Mr. Chuck Berry.
You know, people say we have to make America great again. America is already great when someone like Chuck Berry can come from next to nothing and then change not only American music, but the world so profoundly. And that's a song, basically, that's a song that he wrote in prison during his first prison term. It was released in 1964 after he got out, and it's essentially a song about escape and about, you know, making good in a new land, which is exactly what he did. Promised Land, fantastic song, and it also has my favorite Chuck Berry line of all time, Taxi to the Terminal Zone.
We lost Chuck Berry yesterday at the age of 90, but we had Chuck Berry.
We had Chuck Berry for 90 years, man. That's good.
Thank you, Mr. Berry.